The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of The Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
Hey friends, thanks for inviting us into your home or your car, maybe your office, wherever it is that you're listening right now. Maybe it is even by podcast long after this has aired. We welcome you to the program today. Here on the Shepherd Radio Network, I have with me today Scott Nordstrom. He's my guest, a person I've not met face-to-face, but we share a mutual friend in John Nasby, who's been on my program, and I knew John from some of his work in Central Florida a number of years ago. So, Scott, you're based in Colorado. How's the weather out there today?
It's beautiful. You know, I don't know the exact temperature, but I believe it's probably closing in on 80. So it's been some beautiful weather. We've had a little bit of wind, but, you know, other than that, it's a beautiful day in Colorado.
Now, have you ever spent time in Florida?
I have. I lived in Fort Myers for nearly 5 years, Fort Myers, Florida.
Oh, then you're completely aware.
Yes, and I travel to Florida usually once a year. I was in Florida in January for almost the whole month. Some of it was business, some of it was ministry, and then there was some. We met the family and spent about 4 days there. So,
and that was before, of course, all this stuff started. It was probably in the news coming from China, but. The coronavirus had not hit our shores by that time.
No. Things have changed quite a bit since then.
Yes, they have. And yeah. That, my friend, is saying it mildly. Well, you're here. John highly recommended you to me, and I was so anxious to get to read about your life and find out that you were a guy that kind of minding your own business and thinking that you knew what God wanted you to do in your life, and he surprised you, and we're going to hear all about that surprise that happened in 2005, if I've got the right date.
Yep.
And
yep.
The beginning of an outreach for orphans, and I can't wait to have you tell that story. Because it sounds fantastic. But first of all, before we get to that, tell us how you came to know the Lord, and what was your background, and where did you grow up, and all those good things.
Sure. So our family was from a small town, kind of a rural town in north central Illinois. And, you know, my mother worked outside the home, you know, 2-3 times a week, or she would go grocery shopping, and she didn't want to drag the two little boys with her or what have you. So we ended up at grandma's house quite often. And she was very influential. She would frequently, repetitively share the scriptures with us, pray with us. And she was very influential in us knowing Christ. Now, you know, my mother was as well, but it didn't seem like... It wasn't on the same level of the intensity that grandma did it. And so at a young age, age 4, you know, I believed and accepted Christ. And through my adolescent years, you know, followed him. We, at age 12, our family moved to Colorado and continued to follow the Lord. And it really, you know, until age 16, I got a little, you might say, disoriented. And there was about 5 lost years there where, certainly, I continued to believe, but I wasn't necessarily following, and ended up at the University of Colorado in Boulder, and that's really where the Lord again captured my heart, and I began to kind of walk out more so in obedience to what it is that he had for me.
Mm. That happens to so many people, and finding the Lord at an early age and you know, going through all those years, those were still influential years, and thank God for his grace and the fact that he captures Amen. You again in those later Amen. On years. And boy, sure. that's a neat story. And it also kind of to me, shows the just the wonderful benefit of living near extended family like you did. You know, we used to have that. We lived in Indiana, and now we are that to my grandchildren. So that's good.
Sure.
Three of our actually four of our grandkids are near us, so we get to spend time with half of our grandkids, and that's really wonderful. Scott, you know, you you mentioned Illinois. What part? What was the city? I'm from Indiana, so we were neighbors.
Yeah, sure. It's a place called Princeton, right on Interstate 80, about 100 miles southwest of Chicago and 40 miles east of the Quad Cities. It hasn't changed much, believe it or not, since we left in 1977. But my father and my mother have actually ended up back in that area in their later years, and so my brother also lives in Princeton. So I remain in Colorado. Of course, I did kind of a tour and. You know, my wife and I, we were married in 90, and we moved actually 10,000 miles in our first 7 years of marriage. So I've been around, but never moved back to Illinois. Kind of the interesting thing about being in the ministry now, looking back, is my grandmother, as she prayed with us. You know, she had brothers and other extended relatives that were in the ministry, and she would often out loud pray for me to be a pastor. And it, you know, it didn't matter what age, that freaked me out a bit. And, you know, since 2005, I've had the opportunity, and we'll talk about that more in depth, but to travel and speak in Africa many times. And that's something that I've often brought up, and, the congregations get quite a chuckle out of that. And I still don't consider myself a pastor, but it's interesting how closely the father answered her prayers, even though I'm not technically a pastor. So she was a prayer warrior, and she was a blessing. She was a blessing to our family.
What a wonderful legacy! And to realize that people they don't always have any idea how accurate their prayers or their comments or their thoughts are, but boy, I've heard that so many times. People say, you know, someone came up and said, there's your little preacher, or there's your young man that's going to be used by God. And you were one of those who definitely have been used by the Lord and continuing to do that. And that is such a cool thing to hear about your grandmother. And I'm so grateful you had that experience. Growing up now, and you entered into a business that I would imagine that you thought that was going to be what you did with the rest of your life. You became a communications consultant, is what you're doing now. What were your early forays into that business? What did that look like?
Yeah, so here in Colorado, you know, I at the end of what I call the lost years, it was about 5 years where I was believing, but I wasn't following, and ended up at the University of Colorado in Boulder and majoring in business. And about a year into my time there, I ran into a fellow who sold cable television door to door. And if anyone out there knows about this business, you do it in the evenings on weekends. So it was perfect for a student. And so I ended up working my way through college up there in Boulder, selling cable door to door, mostly in the Broomfield Boulder area, but certainly also sold in the mountains and down in some of the southern metros areas of Denver. But it was such a blessing, and I ended up staying in the cable television industry for several decades.
Wow.
And that's kind of how I ended up in this role. Consulting with property owners in terms of their access rights on their properties.
Because you've just now mentioned several things that are almost not even around anymore. The concept of going door to door to sell, was that as difficult back then as I would imagine it's near impossible now?
I think it is more challenging nowadays for a myriad of reasons. back then, you know, it wasn't, there was something I used to say, it was the hardest job I ever had and the easiest money I ever made, selling cable door to door. So I could tell you some stories, but we we better not do that here. You know, it was really a blessing in terms of being able to support myself as I finished college.
Well, that is so cool. And then the second thing is you've seen a drastic change in what was thought back then to be the wave of the future. And certainly it held, like you said, for decades. But the concept of cable now is almost given way to streaming and companies that pull off of the internet-based mm-hmm. as opposed to cable-based. And from someone that's been as intricately in the business that as you have been, does cable have a future, do you believe?
Well, certainly, you know, their primary product nowadays is high-speed internet, you know, broadband. And that's going to be around for many years. I don't think, you know, we talk and hear about 5G, but I don't believe that they're going to have the bandwidth to supply a household. I mean, as we roam around our households, as we consider what we've got hooked up to the internet, you know, not only do we have our computers, but we've got our cell phones, we have our devices, and there's a lot of bandwidth that's required that I don't believe that will be that can be facilitated via 5G. So I do think that there is a future. I do believe that they are going to continue to use internet as their primary service, but certainly, you know, cable television, you know, people still subscribe to cable television. It is that marketplace is softening a bit. There are a lot more people streaming. There are just so many different ways nowadays to receive video programming. And it really depends on what your viewing preferences are in terms of what services are provided on what platform. So, you know, cable television will diminish over time, but certainly internet penetration in households is going to continue to rise. And so I do think that this business will be around for a while.
Mm. And your role right now, Scott, what would you be primarily busy doing as a consultant these days?
I work with clients to optimize the opportunity in terms of advanced technologies in their communities, and also leveraging those access rights, providing those rights to the service provider to access their communities, maximizing the financial benefit of owners. So we're working through those issues as well as, you know, wiring infrastructure on site to make sure that they can handle whatever products and services are available and those types of things.
Now, you know, we read in the Bible, and one of the things that you wrote me kind of referred to this. Paul was, in his own words, a tent maker. And although that would be literally what he did, it was also now an expression for people who have a heart for ministry, have a heart for God, but earn a good deal of their, if not all of their living, making tents, so to speak, doing something in the secular work world. And now you're still doing that. You're still involved as a consultant, but you have since 2005, which we're going to hear about in this next segment, been doing something that's very different, and I know very much a part of your heart. How do you find the way to balance these two big spheres in your life?
Yeah. So in 2014, I went back into what you might consider corporate America, and, you know, I had a regular job and traveled quite a bit. And in 2017, you know, I sat down with my wife over a couple cups of coffee, talking about, you know, what my heart was and what I wanted to be spending my time doing. At the time, I was spending a couple hours a day commuting. And now I worked the phone during those times, you know, mostly for the ministry, but it was difficult, challenging. And, you know, I had I don't know, 20 some people that reported to me, and it just wasn't conducive to have a lot of flexibility in terms of my day-to-day schedule. And so I resigned my position at a company called Vision Graphics and decided to spend more time in the ministry. That was the driving force, is to spend more time in the ministry. And some of it could have been a lack of faith, Mike. I didn't think God could provide all that I needed. And so I kind of needed to do something.
Mm-hmm.
And I needed to provide for my family. I needed to make an income. And so the way that I kind of helped myself take this step of faith was, well, I'll spend, 25 to 35 hours a week doing this, and then I'll spend 30 to 40 weeks doing global, and I'll be able to support myself. And that's really how I, in my mind, probably not my heart, but that in my mind, that's probably how I was able to step out of, a salaried position into the unknown.
Wow.
And our walk of faith oftentimes requires us to take steps into places we don't know where we're going. I don't know if that makes sense, but we just don't always have a map and we don't know the final destination, but God wants us to go.
Yep.
So we take that step. That's kind of how I was able to do it myself. And not that I wouldn't ever consider being in full-time ministry. I would. Small would be the word, but a moderately sized movement of people. And certainly, I don't know, again, probably my lack of faith, but this is how I've chosen to move forward. Now, the other thing is this gives me great power in, much of the activity that takes place here in the United States is raising funds for mm-hmm. these children.
Mm-hmm.
And so it gives me great power knowing that, I'm busting it every week, not only for these children, but also for my family and also contributing financially to the ministry. So it gives me a lot more power in terms of presenting the opportunity to serve children and inviting other people into the story.
And what a story it is. In 2005, Scott began an adventure, one that he probably didn't see coming way far down the road, but God had it for him. And we're going to hear more about that in a moment. Scott Nordstrom is my guest today on Afternoons with Mike. We'll be back in just a moment. On the line today with Scott Nordstrom. Scott is a consultant with the Communications Consulting Group in Colorado. What city of Colorado are you?
We are in Parker. We're on the south end of the metropolitan area here.
In Denver?
Yes.
Oh, it's a beautiful area. Yeah, I had a friend of mine lived near that area, and out the back, their backyard, some of the most picturesque views you could ever imagine. And I've only gone to Colorado one time, but I've never forgotten it. Getting to eat lunch on that day in the Colorado National, the National Park up there outside of Denver, Rocky Mountain National Park is what it was called. And
sure.
Had my experience of a true in the flesh purple mountain majesty moment where I'm mm-hmm. eating a picnic lunch, staring across the most beautiful mountain I've ever seen. So it was, a memory I'll never forget. And I kind of long for a return to that part. And the weather up there is so unique. We took a trip, Scott, I'm sure you experienced this all the time, but we were there in June, and it wasn't all that hot in Colorado in June. But on the trip up the mountain, we went through rain, then snow and freezing rain, and got up to the top, and there was snow all around. And then coming back down all the way to the bottom of the mountain, back to 70 degrees, all in one trip.
Yep.
That's
something. Yeah, it's unusual. It's an unusual place, but beautiful, and that's why they call it God's country.
Yeah, I can see that. It is so pretty out there. Well, tell us the story of what happened that was the beginning, the birthing of not only the vision, but the reality for Global Orphan Relief.
Yeah, sure. I'd love to do that. So in 2005, My wife and I were blessed with our fourth child, Faith Anastasia. And, you know, it was a long, difficult pregnancy. She was a blessing, but we knew that there was going to be some issues with Faith. And she was born to us in May of 2005, and she was only with us for about 19 days before she went to be with Jesus. So very extremely difficult, challenging time for our family. Our other children, our youngest, I think at the time was 3, our oldest was 7, 8. It was a difficult time for all of us. I would say especially for mom. And, you know, but we got through that, and, we ended up, really, it was a time too, that we were really pressing in to the Lord. I mean, we needed him. I mean, not that we don't need him always, but sometimes it's just obvious mm-hmm. that we mm-hmm. need him. And, we ended up in a international adoption meeting of about 30 days, which, looking back, it seemed a little soon, but we ended up at an adoption meeting. My wife was still, you know, desired another child. And I was just, part of it was my own grief. I was reminded of Faith. And then I was just extremely burdened by all of these children without a mom or a dad. And, you know, being a child, you know, is tough anyway. And, you know, that's why they call it growing. I mean, there's pain in growing, and children go through a lot. And it's just so difficult for an orphan child that doesn't have a mom or a dad or both. And so I was a mess. And my wife thought there was something physically wrong with me. And I didn't. There wasn't. I teared up, and a lot of tears. It was more than just tearing up, but I was just so burdened and touched by all of these children. And maybe I just hadn't thought about it before, or I didn't quantify it before. But there are millions of children in this situation. And so we were feeling led to somehow serve orphan children. And it was obvious that this was a direction that God was taking us. It was not some kind of grief therapy for me or my family. This was an obvious call by the Father for us to serve orphan children. So we received some confirmation soon after, and so we set about. We really had to figure out how to do it. Right? It took us some time, but later that year, we had decided that as a family, we were not going to be at home because it was supposed to be baby's first Christmas. And so we had talked about some spirit-filled places like Washington, D.C., the Magic Kingdom, Hollywood, Las Vegas entered the conversation. And
now Christmas, you did say spirit-filled, right? So
right, I was being sarcastic. Yes. Yeah. So we ended up in an orphanage in Juarez, Mexico, blessing children with Christmas. So about 20 children, and certainly, I'm sure looking back that these children demonstrated and loved on us far more than we were able to love on them. But it was just a supernatural series of events that led us down this path to serve orphan children.
So you go from a planned trip potentially to Disney World and end up in Juarez.
Yes.
Yeah, it's more spirit-filled than I first thought it was, man.
Yeah, well, it was just little things like, so we collected all these Christmas gifts from, you know, friends and family for these children. And then we realized, well, our van, we're not going to be able to fit all of our posse in the van with all this stuff. And so I put the word out that we needed a bigger vehicle. The church that I was attending at the time, though I aggressively tried to convince them that lending me the church van was a good idea, I failed with that. And so someone I knew another guy that had a Suburban that we thought would be just right. So I met this gentleman down at a Christian bookstore here in Parker for the first time. I think it was a day or two before we left. I met him. I thanked him. He gave me the keys to the Suburban. And I drove this stranger Suburban to Juarez. And so, wow. Of course, you know, he's not a stranger anymore. He continues to be a supporter of the ministry. But, you know, just little things like that, that God set in motion, that it was obvious that we were in the right place at the right time in terms of where he wanted us to be.
Now, all of this move, and you said it happened very quickly after losing your child. Mm-hmm. This move toward orphans, was this based on a desire now to adopt a child yourself? Is that how this began?
Well, so it was my wife's desire.
Mm-hmm.
I did, at the time, you know, so we do things. We are pulled in different directions by our spouses, regardless if it's our direction or not. And, you know, it was her desire. We did go through the process and we were approved. But right when we got approved, it was to adopt a child from China. The waiting time for a child it dramatically increased. It was like 12 or more months beyond what we thought we were going to wait.
Mm-hmm.
And we were, you know, I don't want to say we were old, but we were in our lives that we were ready for a child, but we weren't ready 2 years later. So though we did get approved, we dropped out of the process. And I was, as a family, and certainly more so me, I was full, you know, I was full time advancing the cause of orphan children through Global Orphan Relief.
Hmm. So basically you didn't adopt a child. You just basically adopted an orphanage, so to speak, and reaching out to all these people. And that is such a marvelous story. And that was the part that I wondered. It didn't seem like that it ever culminated in an actual adoption, but were there, and God used that to give the impetus toward the birthing of a ministry.
Yes.
Mm.
Yes.
That's
and
marvelous.
We ended up in, after going to Juarez in December of 2005, I ended up in Zambia, Africa in February of 2006. So quickly we were hitting the ground. And again, this was, you know, I don't want to, we didn't have all the answers. We were trying to figure out what it is we were going to be doing. Because initially when we started, we thought we were going to be helping adopting families financially afford the process of adoption, because it's very expensive. And quickly I realized, well, there's only so many children being adopted, while there's millions, over 100 million at the time, according to UNICEF, over 100 million orphan children throughout the world that were never going to be adopted, but needed help.
Hmm.
So that's how we progressed along doing orphan care versus being an adoption-oriented ministry.
You know, Scott, when I hear your trip to Africa, I chuckle inside because of, and this has come up when I've been talking with Missionary Ventures here in Orlando. There's a great organization called Missionary Ventures International. And when I was talking to a couple of their people, I was reminded of something that I grew up hearing in a church when I was a teenager, and how that there would be some people who would be reticent to give their heart completely to the Lord. And here's why they wouldn't do it. They would say, I'm afraid that if I do, he's going to call me to be a missionary in Africa. Or I would never go to a missions convention because I don't want to be end up being called to Africa. So Africa was that magical word that no one wanted to go. And there was a lot of fear, a lot of apprehension. And you are just living proof that when God has a plan, and God puts that plan in a person's heart that includes Africa, you're more than delightfully willing to go.
Yes. Obviously, I was willing. It wasn't something, I can't say that was something I wanted to do. We are a movement that really, we want to be obedient to the Father's leading. This is where he was leading us. He's got this incredible love for us that allows for this thing called free will or free choice, and we didn't have to do it. But you know, when God captures you and you know that this is where he wants you to go, how could any other place be better? So again, it wasn't without its challenges, but we visited Zambia for the first time February, March of 06, and that's really kind of what made us launch into the continent of Africa, is that initial trip.
So help us see the details. How does one go from thinking that God's given you a burden for orphans, and then you make an initial trip? How does that happen? What doors had to open before, and what doors had to open while you're on the way?
Sure. So I had gone to a men's retreat for our church in October of 05. And met a Zambian pastor who had an orphanage in Zambia.
Mm-hmm.
So we talked. He invited me to Zambia, and I prayed about it, considered it, talked to my beloved about that possibility, and then realized that this was God's door opening our ministry that was very, very young, very small. We were still an infant, but this was God's direction. So I took him up on his offer, and we went to Zambia together. So we visited his orphanage. We did some work there in the Copper Belt region up near DR Congo. And so it was just obvious. And after being there, seeing the need, it was just obvious that this was a place that God wanted us to work in. And so I don't know how to explain it, but you just know. And so we mapped out a strategy to continue and to figure out exactly how God wanted us to work in Zambia. And it just progressed from there. We've ended up, in addition to some other things, we ended up developing two orphanages in the southern province of Zambia through a series of events. And it blessed many children in the process.
Mm-hmm. When we get back, we're going to hear from Scott how and what kind of conditions he works in Africa. And their website, if you're interested, would love for you to go and see the page, the message from the founder. It's right there. The website is globalorphanrelief.org. My guest today is Scott Nordstrom. I'll be back with Scott coming up in just a moment. This is Afternoons with Mike here on The Shepherd. On the line today with Scott Nordstrom. Scott is the founder of an unbelievably neat ministry called Global Orphan Relief, and you can find that website, globalorphanrelief.org. And they began this adventure, as you heard in the last segment, as they were mourning the loss of a child. That's something, Scott, that Cindy and I did as well. Our son lived with us for 9 hours. So we're right there understanding the difference, and what a life change. Even having Joshua that long, it impacted me for the rest of my life. And
yes.
The call of God upon my life after that event forever shaped and changed. And so we get it, I understand, but it was through that process of investigating adopting a child that God births in your heart a desire, not for one child, but to help many. And that's what Global Orphan Relief is all about. A lot of people, when they hear the word orphanage, they would think of a place that is a holding tank, if you will, kind of a temporary home while a child is picked over, if you will. These are kind of pictures that I believe images that we have from watching movies, from all sorts of different sources of books that we've read, where an orphanage is a temporary home, but that is not what you're working with in Africa. Why don't you describe the kind of orphanages that you're seeing and the conditions for the children that are living there and why they need help?
Sure, Mike, I can do that. So, of course, I've seen all kinds of orphanages that we're not necessarily associated with, but the orphanages in Zambia that we developed with our partners, NOAA Ministries, they are, these children are placed in a family. So there's a house mom, typically a widow, that works with anywhere from 8 to 12 children in the home. And so these children, if they're transitioned anywhere, they may be transitioned to a home that we've set up in Colombo so they can attend secondary school. But any transition beyond that would be back to their extended family. So we are not actively placing these children in a situation where they would be adopted and displaced somewhere else. We are providing an opportunity to be part of a family at both House of Faith and the House of Hope in the southern province of Zambia. So what we've done, though, in this process, you know, home-based care is one of the most expensive ways in which to care for a child. And so we have also launched a scholarship initiative as well as a nutrition initiative, where we offer some type of assistance to an orphan child or a vulnerable child. So something that you hadn't mentioned, and I don't want to get us too off track here, is back in 2014, I really felt that God was calling us to build the capacity of our ministry to serve more children. And at the time, we were serving just 90. And somehow God impressed upon me this 1,440, which is, that's a monumental jump. It's like 16 times the amount of children that we were serving at the time. And so, you know, oftentimes as God gives us direction, you know, we have to be very intentional in terms of how we walk that out. I mean, we do have to place some type of movement. I mean, God doesn't just rain down capacity for a ministry, it usually requires us to do something. So we set out to kind of grow what we were doing in terms of serving children, and that's kind of how we got into the whole scholarship and nutrition initiatives, because we wanted to expand the number of children that we were blessing, and not every need is the same in each place. So today we serve in DR Congo, Kenya, South Sudan, and Zambia. And we should be somewhere close to 1,700 children this month. And we passed the 1,440 in June. And so it'll be interesting to see, you know, how God directs us going forward in terms of how and where and how many children that we are to serve.
Mm. That is amazing. Getting close to 2,000 kids are being affected, and their lives are being really cared for by the people who are working with you, and you're the emphasis of this. Would Global Orphan Relief do the kind of outreaches that, let's say, things we've heard of, maybe like Compassion, where people will donate each month toward the a particular child? Is that how it's set up?
Yes. I mean, we do have child sponsorships. Our home-based care initiative is really close to being fully funded. And we try to target specific funds, and our partners here in the U.S., we try to target their funds specifically to the initiatives in the field. Where we are more challenged is, it's a lot less expensive to serve meals to a child, but when you're serving, close to 1,300 children, it adds up. So we are far more challenged in the areas right now in terms of financially feeding the children in South Sudan and then the scholarships that we're doing in all of these countries.
Oh, that's wonderful. I tell you, the needs of children, when we think in America, the needs of a child here, that can be overwhelming. But when we get to these other countries, so much less can be given for a child there, and it does so much for them. What would you think it would be on average? I'm sure you have some metric for this, that it takes for a child to make it through a year in one of these homes.
Just right at $1,200.
$1,200. That's
$100 a month.
$100 a month, and a child is being cared for in Africa. That is shocking. And so,
and that's everything. That's the caretaker. That's clothes. That's education, medical, the home they live in, food. That's everything. So we could not begin to consider providing for a child here in the States for $1,200.
No, not even. That might be 1 month, maybe.
Right. Well, it could be. And depending, I think it's best for us not to do the math.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to say. It's going to get me in trouble real quick here in more ways than one. But it is really amazing to hear, Scott, that $1,200 functionally pays for the livelihood, the care for, the medical, the schooling, all of these things with a child in Africa. How often do you go over there yourself?
I usually go once a year. There have been some years I've gone twice. This year, it doesn't look like I'm going to make it due to COVID. I usually go once a year. Last year, I went to Kenya and South Sudan. Was planning on going to Zambia, but the gentleman that was traveling with me fell ill, and I had to get him home, so I wasn't able to make it to Zambia last year.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned that was going to be my next question to you. The pandemic, obviously, just by the nature of the name, it's across all regions. It's really affecting the world. How's this pandemic, COVID-19, affected the homes of these kids?
Well, I would say that, our orphanages, the two orphanages in Zambia are in the bush. There hasn't been, a huge effect on those children. There have been some of the schools that we partner with beyond the orphanages where there have been some closures, government mandated. There's a school that we've partnered with in Nairobi. It was closed, so it's been closed for a couple months now. So I would say more so than that, there's been some disruption. The school in Nairobi was vandalized and broken into, not sure why, but all their books were stolen. So we're in the process of trying to figure out how we can assist them with replenishing their book supply, which is critical for the children, but it's kind of an unbudgeted item. So we're working through that to see if we can help. I would say some communication has been disrupted. Our partner in South Sudan travels between South Sudan and Kenya, and he's not been able to get back into Kenya because of, air flights have been canceled. And we have experienced some disruption, but I don't believe the kids have been directly affected. And we continue to pray that they're not.
So none of the kids or the workers in the orphanages have actually experienced symptoms from COVID-19?
Not that we're aware of, no.
Have you heard any directives that might be a lessening or a loosening of some of the restrictions on travel in that area?
Not so much in Africa, not as of yet. I think, you know, I still have a trip planned to India in October, but I'm not sure It's just one of those things that makes it difficult to plan because, even if flights are available now and visas are accepted, international travel is accepted, well, we don't know if that's going to be the case in October. And so makes it very difficult. Plus, we are from the U.S. and we are the world's hotspot right now for COVID. Right or wrong. I mean, I know people it's been affected by it personally. So it's here. And so I don't believe that other countries are going to continue to be overly receptive to travelers from the U.S. If things continue on the same track.
Well, we're hoping that thing goes off track, track.
Yeah, me too.
My goodness, this is crazy. So in the interim, we can't change any of those things. That's for a fact.
No.
But in the interim, how can people partner with you and become involved in helping one of these orphans?
So, certainly funding. I mean, we have a project in South Sudan. We are currently, as of last month, we are currently feeding about 944 children at two schools. We just launched a new school. This time of year in South Sudan is what they refer to as a skinny season. This is when people lose weight because there's not a lot of food in the bush. So we've partnered with Kids for the Kingdom, who built the kitchen, and our local partner that facilitates the feedings, to launch a new school in a place called Lethwick, where we'll feed probably somewhere right around 300 children. And, we've got a commitment to do so for 6 months, and we raise funds for that. Well, we don't have funding beyond that. We don't have funding beyond next month for the other two schools. I mean, so we're doing it extremely cost effectively. I mean, we're down to about $3.25 per child per month. And it's unbelievable that we can get some nutrition to these kids for that level of cost. But it's a lot of children. So that's what makes it challenging. So certainly funding, once we get back up and running with some of our trips, we could certainly invite folks who want an opportunity to visit and see firsthand some of the work that's going on in a place like Zambia or South Sudan or what have you. We've deployed 159 volunteers over the years, with dozens and dozens of trips to give them an opportunity to see firsthand what's going on in the field. So that, once the COVID lifts, that is an opportunity. We're just not sure what the outlook is at this time.
Oh my goodness. I sure hope it's sooner than later. Scott Nordstrom, with the Global Orphan Relief Organization that he founded in 2005. What a wonderful surprise that God brought into your life and the life of your wife. And thank you for your sacrifice and the way that you care for these people and growing upwards toward that 2,000 child mark is quite amazing, especially when you consider that this began as a bit of a surprise of a leading from the Lord to you. And may God bless you. And thank you, Scott, for your sacrifice, because it is something you're doing really out of a heart to obey the Lord. I really appreciate
it. It is. And thank you, Mike, for this opportunity to share with others. And if anybody would love to get involved in any way, please reach out to us.
And they can reach you through the website. That's globalorphanrelief.org, if I've got that correct. Globalorphanrelief.org. And tell your friends, if you're hearing this on the radio now, it will be posted on our webpage as a podcast, so they can spread it around and get the word out about Scott's work in Africa. And that webpage for The Shepherd is theshepherdradio.com, and hopefully they'll be able to download it and spread that word around. And Scott, we wish you the best in the days to come, and Godspeed to you in all that you're doing.
All right. God bless you, Mike.
Thank you so much. And friends, thank you for being with me today on The Shepherd. We'll be back the next time on Afternoons with Mike.